Welcome back to the Vatican Briefing, National Catholic Reporter's podcast covering Pope Francis and the big decisions facing the global Catholic Church. I'm Joshua McElwee, the Reporter's news editor.
And hello, I'm Christopher White, the Reporter's Vatican correspondent.
We've got an important episode for you this week. My colleague Chris White and I were together in Washington and had a chance to speak with Archbishop Boris Gudziak, an American who is a leader in the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. Gudziak currently leads the Archeparchy of Philadelphia, which includes Ukrainian Catholics across much of the eastern U.S. He previously led the eparchy responsible for Ukrainian Catholics across France, Belgium, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and Switzerland. The Archbishop was participating in a conference at Georgetown University, and we wanted to take the opportunity to speak with him about the continuing war in Ukraine. We also wanted to ask him about a recent interview in which Pope Francis appeared to suggest that Ukrainian leaders might negotiate some sort of an agreement with Russia to end the war. As you'll hear, the Archbishop said he and many other Ukrainians were taken aback by the Pope's comments, and the Archbishop spoke movingly about the intense suffering of the Ukrainian people. Given the importance of the subject, Chris and I thought it was best to get right to the interview this week. So, after the music, you'll hear our interview with Archbishop Boris Gudziak. Archbishop Gudziak, thank you so much for joining us today on the Vatican Briefing.
Thank you.
Archbishop, the war in Ukraine has been the focus of a lot of conversation in the U.S. in recent days. President Biden started his State of the Union by mentioning the conflict and spoke of the incredible suffering of the Ukrainian people. Can you offer an update on the state of the war? What bubbles to your mind about what you're hearing from your friends in the country?
So I've been back there 8 times since February 22, and I don't know how many conversations I have daily or communications. But I'm not a military strategist, and I'm not the one to ask about kind of the military side of the war. The war is a hybrid war. It's not just what is happening on the front. There's a cyber war. There's an information war. There's a food war. There's a climate war, not this winter, but the winter before last, before this one. Putin, for example, tried to freeze the country by knocking out the energy grid, and he knocked out 40%, but people shared their warmth, and it didn't work. Nobody's starving because people have come together. 14 million people were forced from their homes, but they're not in refugee camps. They also have been kind of integrated. So the real story of the war for me is the triumph of good, the articulation and incarnation of Catholic social doctrine, human dignity, solidarity, subsidiarity, and the common good. Ukrainian society, which is standing up like David to Goliath, to the second biggest army in the world, to this aggression, to this hate, to this explicitly articulated desire to destroy Ukraine and everything Ukrainian, it's standing, surprisingly. All the analysts and specialists expected that Ukraine would fall in 3 days, a week, 2 or 3 weeks. And 2 years later, the Russians aren't making advances. The Russian Navy has been pushed out of the eastern part of the Black Sea, and the grain is now flowing to the Middle East and to the Arab countries. And Ukraine is able to feed not only itself, but normally, under normal circumstances, Ukraine, country of over 40 million people, was feeding 400 million people. So I see that is the main story.
Archbishop Shevchuk, primate of the Ukrainian Catholic Church, and several other Ukrainian bishops were in the U.S. this past week. We're speaking today on March 13th. Can you give us a sense of what the purpose of their visit and how that went?
So the bishops of our church, which has 37 dioceses, eparchies or exarchates, 17 in Ukraine and 20 outside. There's 4 in the U.S., 5 in Canada, and others in other countries and continents. They meet together for the synod once a year for about a dozen days, usually in the summer or early fall. Between those annual meetings, there are meetings of what is called the permanent synod. That's 4 bishops plus the head of the church and a bishop secretary. And they meet to prepare the general synod. They also work on different aspects like trying to identify candidates for episcopal service, or on liturgical translations, canon law. They try to coordinate the pastoral plan or let's say monitor the development and incarnation of the pastoral plan of the church, the global Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. And usually, of course, this permanent synod occurs in Ukraine, but it sometimes travels to the diocese that exist. And as Beatitude Svetoslav proposed, that we make the rounds. So there's the four other permanent synod bishops. One is from Poland. We were there last May. One is from Chernivtsi in Romania. We were there in December. And I'm from Washington, or Philadelphia, the U.S. We met in Washington, Philly, in New York. And our next meeting will be in Munich, Germany, in May. So we came here making the rounds, so to speak. But we also came because clearly in Washington, in the U.S., there's decisions made that affect the future of Ukraine. And for our church, it's do or die. It's liberty or death. Every time since the 18th century that there is a Russian occupation on Ukrainian territory, our church is obliterated as a visible entity. It's rendered illegal on that territory. And it's already illegal on much of the occupied territory. On the eastern part of the occupied territory, not Crimea, there's not a single active Catholic bishop, Eastern or Latin Catholic. So we came here, we met as a synod doing synod business. We met with our Roman Catholic brothers in the episcopacy. We met with the staff, mostly lay, in the bishops' conference. We met with Orthodox bishops. We met with our faithful in all three cities. And we met with political leaders in Washington.
That's a very moving statement that you've made now about this being a do-or-die moment for your church. And as the Ukrainian bishops were on their visit here, we saw this new interview with Pope Francis released by a Swiss broadcast channel. In the interview, the Pope seemed to suggest that Ukrainian leaders might negotiate some sort of agreement with Russia to end the war. I'm wondering how that was received among the bishops, how that was taken on.
Not only the bishops, but our clergy, our faithful, and the people of Ukraine were really knocked off balance by this, because 30 years ago in 1994, Ukraine went the route of negotiations. It had the third biggest nuclear arsenal in the world. It had more nukes than France, England, and China put together. And it negotiated away a nuclear arsenal. You know, all of us who advocate for peace, for disarmament, for nuclear disarmament, we dream about it. And yet nobody speaks about the fact that somebody did it. Most people don't realize that Ukraine had the third biggest nuclear arsenal in the world, and it gave it up for what? For guarantees of independence and territorial integrity, including Crimea. And those guarantees were issued by Russia, Great Britain, and the U.S., and France and China signed another agreement. And so today, any discussion of nuclear disarmament will have to answer, well, one country did it, and those that guaranteed its independence and sovereignty really didn't defend it. So negotiating with Russia and Putin today is a no-go, because Ukrainians have tried. They see that he is a relentless killer. He doesn't care about his own citizens. He sent tens of thousands of his own citizens into the meat grinder with no consideration for human life. He, under his auspices, opposition politicians are killed in a way that is in your face. It was Navalny died during the Munich Security Conference. Boris Nemtsov was shot in Red Square. The journalists, there have been scores of journalists that have given their lives for trying to report the truth in Russia. And that's why I really respect journalists, because also in Ukraine, many journalists have died during this war reporting it. And it was a beautiful moment that kind of a photo video journalist won the Oscar a few days ago. So basically, this is a very problematic expression. I think the Holy Father really cares for the people of Ukraine, and he cares for the suffering people of the world. But I think this interview was also manipulated. We haven't seen the whole thing, so the jury is out on many details. But the expression itself was very unfortunate.
Archbishop, not to suggest that you would tell the Pope what to do, but if you had a few minutes to talk to Pope Francis about the war, what would be on your mind that you wanted to convey to him?
Well, I had one of this is not the first time that there's been kind of a equivocal expression from the Holy See or from the Holy Father himself. The Holy Father has been quite open to listening. There was such an expression in August on Ukrainian Independence Day in 1922 and on August 24th and on August 26th, I had an hour and a half conversation with Pope Francis trying to explain at that point one of the things that the Pope said, well, some politicians say it's NATO expansion that has led to this Russian invasion. Well, Russia has been invading Ukraine for 300 years, long before NATO existed. So that is by no means the reason. The reason is clear. Putin wants to renew what was the old Soviet or old Russian Empire in its expanse. And this includes the Baltics. It includes Ukraine. It includes Armenia, Georgia, Kazakhstan, the other Turkish states. And it also included a sphere of influence, Poles, the Baltic countries, Romania, etc. So that's why those countries are very sanguine. They understand, you know, what is at stake. Our synod was in Rome in September for almost 2 weeks, and we had a two-hour meeting where 45 bishops were present, and I think 17 of us had an opportunity to express ourselves. So we have expressed ourselves, and it is difficult for people from outside the totalitarian experience to understand what Putin's Russia and a person like Putin is all about. We kind of think people are kind of like us. Well, there's very different people. And genocidal tyrants, despots, think differently than, you know, our grandmothers or our priests or our bishops or our popes. Pope Francis, when he finished the textual part of his address to young Catholics in Russia in August of this past year, 23, wanted to encourage the Russian people and said, you have a great history. Look to the good things in your history. You had an empire. You had Peter the Great, Catherine the Great. I don't know if Pope Francis would speak about empire in any other context as a value. And I'm sure he doesn't realize that, for example, Peter the Great personally, with his own hands, killed monks of our church. He came in on his name's day after probably a good party. Maybe inebriated. He came into one of our churches in Polotsk on July, I think it was July 10th, according to the old calendar, the Feast of Peter and Paul. And he cut the ears off one monk, beat him up, and pierced him with a sword. The next day, they cut the ears off another monk and had him walk with the ears in hand to the gallows where he was hung. Putin says he wants to be Peter. We don't know that he's cut off ears, but he does not worry about the spilling of blood of children, of his own soldiers, of politicians, of journalists, and the whole, you know, canard. He was saying we need to liberate the Russian language speakers. Well, the occupied part of Ukraine that is under Russia was mainly Russian speakers, and those cities have been destroyed. In Mariupol, that the 20 days in Mariupol that the Oscar-winning documentary is about, was the most Russian-speaking city in Ukraine. And tens of thousands of people were killed in that city. The Russians don't allow international agencies to come in, so nobody knows. So the official death count of civilians, according to the United Nations, is under 20,000. It's probably three or four times as high. And they themselves say it's much higher. So this idea of negotiating, this idea that, you know, there's this great Russian culture. Russian culture has not been stripped of its colonial mentality. The church has a colonial mentality. Patriarch Kirill speaks in jihadist terms. He says, soldiers, if you go to Ukraine on a killing mission and you're killed, your sins will be forgiven. This is very different than Pope Francis. This is not how Pope Francis thinks. That, of course, is an understatement. And I think even the Holy Father has difficulty understanding who the world is dealing with, who Ukraine is dealing with. Ukrainians have no questions. 15 million Ukrainians were killed in the 20th century through different genocides. Many of them operated out of Moscow. And now, under occupation, we are all seeing the mass graves, the use of rape as a weapon, from children to 70-year-old women. And the continuous bombing of civilian homes, apartment buildings, marketplaces, shopping centers, schools, churches. 600 churches have been damaged or destroyed. I think 4,000 schools have been damaged or destroyed, 2,000 hospitals. This is a relentless attack at anything Ukrainian. And that is what we want to bring to the Pope. Now, I probably would speak about, as his Beatitude does, about the four categories of suffering families. The families that have lost somebody, that are in deep bereavement. The families that have somebody injured. There's close to 50,000 soldiers that have now endured amputations. Imagine in all the post-9/11 U.S. wars for 20 years, 2,500 American soldiers had to undergo amputations. Here in 2 years, there's 20 times as many. So injured soldiers who will have to be, you know, taken care of for the rest of their lives, if they have families that can do that. But you can imagine what it's like to have a double, triple amputee, a blinded soldier, somebody that's deaf because of, you know, contusions from bombs. Category three, very painful, missing in action. You don't know. Do you pray for the deceased? Do you still look for the person? Do you pray for freeing? It's torture, daily, daily torture. And then there are the families that have prisoners of war and that are constantly thinking, have I done enough to try to get a message out there? Is there anything that I can do to get my son, my husband, my brother, my child freed? This is hundreds of thousands of families are living in this acute anxiety from day to day. I think that's the message that the Holy Father needs to hear, and that's something that he is incredibly responsive to. There's many things he does behind the scenes to try to help, but the communications need to be systematic, they need to be coherent, and they can't be manipulated. The Russians really, you know, had a field day.
Archbishop, you place us in a context that is very different from what we might experience in America or in Italy or the Pope coming from Argentina. And something that's been striking to me is that the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the continuing war kind of came at a time when the Catholic Church seemed to be reevaluating its just war teachings. There had been conferences at the Vatican. The Pope has spoken about there never being a just war. I wonder, as you look at what's happening in Ukraine, do you think there are lessons for how the Church should consider its teachings on nonviolence or how it considers the just war theory?
The Ukrainian Catholic University, and I serve as the head of the board of directors, and Notre Dame just put out a book, it's in my bag upstairs, about the churches in the war. And there's an international authorship, and I think there's many, many responses to your question in this very good volume. Members of our church, our university community, our bishops are calling for a contemporary consideration of what war and peace, what just war, just defense, what all of this means, how to express it given contemporary technology and the danger of contemporary weapons. We specifically asked our synod in our letter to the Holy Father, which was signed by 45 bishops in September, we specifically asked that the Holy Father bring attention to the fact that Ukraine unilaterally disarmed its nuclear arsenal, because the Catholic world doesn't know this. And many peacemakers don't put this at the center of a discussion of nuclear disarmament. We also are asking that there be a Catholic reconsideration of what just war is, because it's easy to be fluffy about this. Jesus sacrificed himself. The first saints of Ukraine, Boris and Hlib, were the sons of Saint Volodymyr, who baptized Kyiv, were martyrs for love. Their brother, older brother, wanted to accede to the throne and feared them, so he attacked Boris and Hlib, my patrons, my personal patrons, and they said 900 years before Gandhi, before Martin Luther King, we will not resist violence with violence. They sacrificed who? Themselves. But are we allowed to sacrifice children or others? That is the kind of question that, you know, just war addresses. If I go into a subway and some goon is beating up a little old lady, I'm going to defend her. That is what just war is about.
Archbishop, this has been a very trying 2 years for you, for Ukraine. Just a final question. What gives you hope amidst all this suffering and all this pain?
Oh, I have no doubt that God's truth will prevail. We're in God's hands. There's that fundamental Christian verity of the resurrection. The way of the cross lived with Christ always leads to the resurrection. But there's also a deep family experience. My parents were war refugees. As teenagers, they fled the communists and the Nazis in 1944, eventually, you know, making it to America. At that time, 7 million inhabitants of Ukraine, Poles, Jews, Russians were killed. 7 million. But life came back. Our church, between 1946 and 1989, was rendered illegal by the Soviet authorities. Every bishop was in prison. Hundreds of priests with their families were sent to Siberia. The participation of the church in the underground was reduced by 99%. There was a last remnant. There were 3,000 priests who were reduced to 300 aged priests, each of which could serve maybe 100 people. So out of 4 million people, only 30,000 had some contact with the underground church. Today we're back at 3,000 priests almost. We are called to live. God wants us to live. And he will not let the devil prevail over the church, over his design, over his will. And I've lived it in my life. I've seen, I was a teenager, I was a PhD student, I was a seminarian at a time when we were coming to Washington protesting about Soviet persecution of the church. And a lot of people would say, well, yeah, it's a sad story, it's a tragedy, but it's not going to change. Your church is dead, is gone. The head of our church, His Beatitude, Cardinal Joseph Slipy, who spent 18 years in the Gulag and then was released to attend Vatican II because the Soviets thought he would die quickly. He was really in bad shape, ended up living for another 20 years. You know, the first thing he did was declare the creation of a university in Italy, which is now the Ukrainian Catholic University in Ukraine, and now it has the highest incoming SAT scores. He told us, evil will not last forever. And fortunately, we were too young not to believe him. You know, I was 19, 20, 21 years old, and we believed. We believed that God's truth will prevail. So if you've lived the resurrection once, woe to you if you doubt it. Will there be continued suffering, bloodletting? I think probably so, because there is not enough of a consensus in the world, and even among Catholics, to put a stop to this. But sooner or later, the truth will prevail, life will prevail, and the sacrifice of martyrs and those who give their lives for their friends, responding to, you know, Jesus' characteristic of the greatest love, all of that wins out.
Archbishop Gudziak, thank you so much for joining us on the Vatican Briefing and for bringing your perspective and the experience of the Ukrainian people. We're very grateful to you.
Thank you. Thank you for the work of journalists. And as I say, many of your colleagues have given their life for the truth in this war.
Thank you again to Archbishop Gudziak. We are so very grateful for his time and his care in conveying the experience of the Ukrainian people in this time of war and tragedy. We're going to go ahead and wrap up the episode here. We won't be back in your feed for a couple of weeks, as we at National Catholic Reporter prepare to celebrate Holy Week and the Easter holiday. In the meantime, you can find our show notes and all of our work at National Catholic Reporter at ncronline.org. If you listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other service, please don't forget to click subscribe. That way, you'll be notified every time we have a new episode. Until next time, you've been briefed.
The Vatican Briefing is a production of National Catholic Reporter. John Grasso is your executive producer. Joshua McAlee and Christopher White are your producers and hosts. The editing was done by Angie Von Slaughter in conjunction with David Dalt of Sandberg Media. Today's music is provided by Blue Dot Sessions. This podcast and NCR's future media initiative are made possible in part by the generosity of Bill and Jean Buchanan.